with the power of 4 out of 100. Help, and we will save the world. If we don't help, it won't get done.
That is the voice of a distant relative of President Abraham Lincoln. That's right, the 16th president, Honest Abe, and also a relative of Mr. Rogers. And he'll be giving us 7 super tips on today's Super U podcast.
One small step for man.
Liftoff. We choose to go to the moon, not because they are easy, but because they are hard.
I have a dream.
You can't handle the truth.
7 6 5 4 3 2 1
Super
U. Thank you for joining us for today's Super U podcast. I am your host, Eric Qualman. A lot of you know me as Equal Man. This is the podcast that is designed to unlock and unleash that superpower that is within all of us. And to help us do that today, we have my favorite actor of all time. We have Mr. Tom Hanks. I've been watching him since Bosom Buddies.
See, it's all perfectly normal.
You did hear me correct, Bosom Buddies. Quick trivia question. Who was the co-star along with Tom Hanks in that show? Peter Scolari, that's right. And then it had a great theme song for that show because it was written by the very talented Grammy Award winning Billy Joel. So 2 points for you if you got both of those. But again, we're going to go over 7 super tips from Tom Hanks to help unlock and unleash the superpower within all of us. This is all made possible by Amazon Prime, so thank you, Amazon Prime. If you don't have Prime, you're probably one of the few that don't have it. Check it out. Make sure you get it. But it has a lot of cool things. Like, you can use stuff on Audible. Obviously, some of my books are on Audible. The latest book, The Focus Project's on Audible, so give that a listen. But thanks again for joining us here today. Thanks for listening to the Super U podcast, and I hope it's helping you out. So without further ado, let's get into tip number 1 from Tom Hanks.
In the beginning, I was just thrilled to know that someone was asking me to be in a movie, and I thought that was all that was required. And as long as they keep asking, everything will fall into place. And I think I had to become dissatisfied with my own process, you know, 5 or 6 movies in, where I was feeling that I was not bringing to the work anything other than that instinct. And that's when I realized that, you know, okay, I'm part of me got older. And I think even if you're as old as 29, you have a different set of chops and perspective. You have a different, believe it or not, wisdom than you did when you were 24. And I think about every 5 years, I went through some sort of process of reexamining where I was in life, you know, as a man, as well as an actor. And thinking, like, guess what? I'm 36 now, and there's a whole world of movies that I can't make anymore because I can no longer – I don't want to play the young man who's trying to figure out life. I want to play a man of bitter compromise. I want to play somebody who's been through something. So it's a never-ending process, I think, of examining where you are in life as a human being and then transposing that so it's going to be reflected in your work somehow.
You know, it's interesting. Before finding fame, Hanks actually brushed up against some stars, some celebrities. He worked as a bellhop at the Hilton Hotels during college. Then he enrolled at California State University in Sacramento, Sactown. And Hanks said it's the greatest job, you know, carrying bags for sports and entertainment figures. He said he carried Cher's bag when she was married to Greg Allman. And then he gave Sidney Poitier a ride to the airport. My good friend, who's very, very successful, actually, after he graduated from undergrad, went out to Aspen and did the same thing. You know, he worked at a hotel, I think it was called the Little Nell, and he worked there. It says fantastic. Got to meet like Jimmy Connors, you know, Arnold Schwarzenegger, and just got to learn a lot about life by taking that position. But Hanks, other jobs he did before becoming the person we know today, he sold concessions like peanuts and sodas. At the Oakland A's games in Oakland, California as a teenager. And he kind of went down there and goes, you know, I went down to sell peanuts and soda. I think it'd be like in a TV show. Well, he said, first of all, I got robbed twice. If you've ever been near that arena, it is very dangerous, especially during a Raiders game. But then he came across professional vendors who did not like the fact that kids were actually there selling to take their jobs. So very interesting learning experiences there. It's funny, those first jobs that we have out of school. I worked at a movie theater. It was a great job, but definitely learned a lot about life. Those first jobs we take as teenagers, we always learn a lot. So if you have teenagers, make sure they get out there, take a job. They'll learn a ton from it, and they'll always be able to reference it and talk back to it, probably with more glowing terms than actually when they're in it and enjoying it. But at least that's been my case. But anyways, let's get on with the show. We're going on to tip number two.
1,000 years ago in 1977, when I was an intern at the Great Lakes Shakespeare Festival, my first professional job, we all got yelled at by Dan Sullivan, the director. We had partied a little bit too much the night before. We were showing up for rehearsals and he screamed at us. Well, he did actually scream at us. He said, "Hey, look, you guys, you actors, you know what your job is? You know what your job is? You have got to show up on time and you have to know the text and you have to have a head full of ideas. Otherwise, I can't do my job." That was the greatest lesson a young actor could possibly ever get. First of all, the head full of ideas. Bring anything. Try anything. They might not use it. If it stinks, they won't use it. Am I right, Marty Scorsese? If it's not good, boy, let's see the outtakes from that movie, by the way. Knowing the text, and it's not just your lines. It's the whole thing. It's the red dot. It's the theme of the movie. You've got to know it. You might not be right in what the opinion that you bring to it, but you've got to come at it with some direction. And as Charlize might know, and some of the other people who've worked with us through the Playtone Galaxy of Stars, showing up on time is one of the greatest liberating acts you can give yourself in a movie. That means those people with radios in the ears don't need to knock on your door and say they're ready for you. You're actually already ready, and you have the liberty and you have the freedom of being there early enough to settle down, because when the time comes, you have to hit the marks. And you have to go there.
You know, my favorite movie might be tied with Hoosiers, but Forrest Gump. So Hanks, he didn't take a salary for Forrest Gump. So that's how bought in he was. He believed in it so much. And then, interesting enough, the role was actually turned down originally by John Travolta. So it's kind of hard for me to imagine John Travolta in that role of Forrest Gump. But fortunately for all of us, it was Tom Hanks that took that role. And then in other roles, he was actually the second or third choice. Like Chevy Chase turned down both the roles of Turner and Hooch and also Splash, which, as we know, Hanks then eventually went on and was cast for those roles. But getting back to Forrest Gump, when Paramount Pictures wouldn't pay for a scene where, remember that iconic scene, have you seen the movie where Forrest runs across the country, all these beautiful shots? Well, it's really expensive to do that. But Hanks and then fellow director Robert Zemeckis, they said, "Let's step up and we'll foot the bill." Now, keep in mind, they asked for more equity in that film, more percentage of the tickets sold at the movie theaters by doing that. And so it worked out really well for him, because he went on to earn $65 million in the profits from that box office hit, Forrest Gump.
My mom always said, life was like a box of chocolates. You never know what you're going to get.
Well, I felt like I was a complete abject total failure, and everything I thought was working was actually not working. It's a place that everybody comes to in their life for one reason or another. You know, I would go off and talk to somebody and say, what have I done wrong? And they would say, well, what do you think you've done wrong? Why am I so unhappy? Well, tell me about your unhappiness. And you work through that till you figure out that, you know, number one, you have been an idiot, but number two, you're no longer an idiot. It's human nature to go through these kind of, not just depressions, it's not necessarily a clinical thing, but you just go through dark times. You just go through moments where you think, oh man, I'm fucked, and I'll never be anything other than just like this guy that I am now. But you learn. The aid that you can get from just asking these questions of yourself and verbalizing it to somebody who's really a really good student of human nature can help you get through some very tough stuff. Now, sometimes it's a priest at the church that you trust. Sometimes it's a it's a really good friend. I've had versions of all those things that have been the type of people that have said, you know, you're not a horrible person and this will pass. You just got to have a little bit of faith in the goodness that is inside yourself.
This is my favorite tip of the day, tip 3, because you're going to feel like a failure. This is coming from Tom Hanks, right? Arguably the most successful actor of all time, or at least our generation. And he's felt like a failure. And he's had those dark times, even coming off those very, very high times. And sometimes you have that question, what am I doing with my life? And so it's just really good to hear that. That's why we do this show. That's why we do this Super You podcast, because we hear from these top thought leaders, these top celebrities, these top athletes, and they go through these dark challenges and times. We always think we're alone, but we're not. But it's interesting. He did get one of his first breaks because he appeared in Happy Days. If you remember that TV show, Happy Days, Ron Howard was an actor in that show, but he only appeared in one brief shot on that nostalgic TV series. But Ron Howard, the actor, remembered him. So when Howard became a famous director, he requested the Tom audition for a role in Splash. And he was so impressed. It was for a secondary role, actually. But he was so impressed by the read that he actually gave Tom Hanks the lead instead.
As soon as you have that date on the calendar where you're going to have to show up and put on clothes that are not your own and pretend you're somebody that you're not, you're running the great risk. It's a big high wire act because you got a 50-50 chance that you're going to fail. That you're not going to be there. Any movie you go through is an emotional ER, man. You're being whipped back and forth between moments where if you don't get it on that day, on that moment, it's not in the movie. You better be there. The only thing you can do is stretch yourself to a limit and hope you come back. And as soon as I start a movie, as soon as it begins, there's the exciting element of it, but that element is one of danger. Are you going to be able to do it? Are you going to be able to look at yourself? And I still look at films and I think there's moments where I go like that over the TV or the screen because I don't need to see myself be so disappointing. And this goes back to earlier days where you think, man, you're driving home at the end of the day or you're back at the hotel and you think, oh, man, I cracked it today, man. I was damn good. I popped that scene, man. I had the dialogue. I had the motivation. I was flexible. I crushed it. And then you see the movie and it's a big, fat nothing. Nothing works. Nothing's
really
real. Oh yeah, happens all the time. And the inverse happens as well. I didn't know what I was doing. I'm not sure I even knew what that scene was about after we talked about it at the end of the day. I mean, did I even come close to getting there what it was supposed to? I don't know. Ah, well, if it's not any good, it won't be in the movie. And then it ends up being like one of the most magnificent moments of your career. There's no rhyme or reason to it. It's cruel and indifferent fate. And you cannot assume that you have done it great, nor should you assume that you've been a failure at it.
Now, how successful is Hanks? Hanks was the second actor in history, that's right, in history, to earn back-to-back Best Actor Oscars. For which roles? Which roles are those? I'll give you a hint. It was 1993, and then in 1994. I've already mentioned one of the films. And so in 1993, he was nominated for Philadelphia, and then in 1994 for Forrest Gump. Now, the only other actor to get those back-to-back Best Actor Oscars, that's hard to say twice, by the way, Best Actor Oscar nominations was Spencer Tracy. And he earned those consecutive Oscars for the 1937 Captain's Courageous and 1938 Boys Town. And to this day, they remain the only two actors to achieve such an impressive feat. Now, these are interesting words because you don't often hear them. So Hanks is saying, you can't assume you're great and you can't assume you're a failure. And that's what we talk about on the show all the time. It's what I talk about on stage all the time. It's all about balance. Everything in life is a balance. Now, part of that balance is surrounding yourself with lifelong friends. Sadly, I lost my best friend from the fifth grade this year to cancer. It is a poignant reminder to me, and hopefully it is to you as well out there as listeners, that you only have so many lifelong friends. So invest in those friendships, cherish them. Just text someone. It's easier than ever. Just text someone you haven't spoken to in maybe years. Just tell them you're thinking about them and that you cherish that relationship, that long-term relationship that you have with them. Hank's, one of his long-time relationships since they were childhood friends, is Bruce Springsteen. And their friendship actually went into the professional realm because that's where Bruce won an Academy Award for his song, The Streets of Philadelphia, from the film Philadelphia. So here we are with tip number 5.
How to trust your instincts more than anything else, because you can't ultimately. It's not an intellectual process. Making a movie, and specifically acting in a movie, there is a way. Early on, you make this judgment decision. Yes, I'll do it. Yes, no, I won't. That's really it. After that, you just have to fill yourself up, make yourself this kind of repository thing. You can't 6 months prior to it be doing some research. Ah, you see this moment right here? I am going to utilize that moment when the time comes. No, it has to be some other. Yeah. You just keep loading yourself up so that when the moment comes, you have so much the intangible stuff at your fingertips so that you can realize, oh, I know, I have 9 images in my head that will help me communicate this idea, as opposed to one specific decision I made 6 months ago or even the night before.
Now, many of us know that Tom Hanks and Meg Ryan are the king and queen of romantic comedies, but can you name the first one that they made together? Some of you might be thinking Sleepless in Seattle. Nope. Some of you thinking You've Got Mail. Wrong again. It's actually the lesser known Joe versus the Volcano. Don't recommend you watch it, but it was Joe versus the Volcano. Those that have watched it, it's like a quirky love story about a man who's agreed to jump into a volcano. And on his journey to the volcano's island, you know, the passion erupts when he meets Ryan's character. So I'm guessing that Joe versus the Volcano probably isn't Hank's prouder moments, but there is a moment in 2016 that he is probably proud of. That's when President Barack Obama awarded Hanks with the honor in 2016 for not only his film work, but his social and environmental justice efforts and advocacy on behalf of veterans in their families. All right, here we are moving on to tip number 6.
It's always a battle against self-consciousness. It's hard to get past the realization that you're pretending to be somebody and people are looking at you, even if it's the crew. I wish I had more basic things, at more tools. I wish I'd gone through more classes. I wish I had been forced to take a dance class. I wish I had forced to get up and sing in front of people. I wish I had taken I wish I'd gone to that kind of like performance school in which you have to get past the self-consciousness of not being able to do it well and still having to do it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, of
it's
course.
Like I couldn't. The idea of singing in front of anybody makes my throat constrict.
Yes,
I
exactly.
Can't do it. And I wish that I would have. Yeah, or get off the stage, or you don't get the job, or anything like that. I wish I had gone through more of the tools of the actor, so to speak.
So Hanks, even Hanks has those. Man, I wish I would have. I wish I did this. But it's about moving forward. So he says, I wish I had more tools or done more studying to get those tools of an actor. But all of us know that if you waited to be 100% ready, you would never step into an arena. As Teddy Roosevelt pointed out almost 100 years ago, is that it's really about stepping into that arena, whether you're ready or not. You're never going to be 100% ready. So it's about stepping into the arena. And speaking of tools, Hanks estimates that he owns 250 typewriters. You know, 250 typewriters. And it's something that Hanks finds reassuring, comforting. He just finds it dazzling that here there's a specific machine or apparatus that is meant to only do one thing, and it does it perfectly. And so when you think about it, that's kind of cool. It's a great metaphor. That probably that's why he has them around him. It's like, do one thing. Like, what's that one thing that if I do it well, makes everything else either easier or unnecessary? And it's like, I love typewriters, but I never thought about the fact that it really does one thing exceptionally well. And to have that kind of front mind visually around you kind of reminds you, okay, what's that one thing that if I do it well, makes everything else either easier or unnecessary?
It's not a bit of advice, but it's a plea. In fact, it's a single four-letter word. It's a verb and a noun, which takes into account the reality of your 4 years at Vassar, as well as the demands of the next 4 decades you spend beyond this campus. It's a message once made familiar by the Beatles, those Northern English lads who embodied the power of four. Help. We need help. Your help. You must help. Please provide help. Please be willing to help. Help. And you will make a huge impact on the life of the street, the town, the country, and our planet. If only one out of four of each 100 of you choose to help on any given day in any given cause, incredible things will happen in the world you live in. Help publicly, help privately, help in your actions by recycling and conserving and protecting, but help also in your attitude. Help make sense where sense has gone missing. Help bring reason and respect to discourse and debate. Help science to solve and faith to soothe. Help law bring justice until justice is commonplace. Help, and you will abolish apathy, the void which is so quickly filled by ignorance and evil. Life outside of college is just like life in it. One nutty thing after another. Some of them horrible, but all interspersed with enough beauty and goodness to keep you going. That's your job, to keep going. Your duty is to help without ceasing. The art you create can glorify it. The science you pursue can prove its value. The law you practice can pass on its benefits. The faith you embrace will make it the earthly manifestation of your God. Here at Vassar, whatever your discipline, whatever your passion, you have already experienced the exhausting reality that there is always something going on, and there is always something to do. And most assuredly, you have sensed how effective and empowering it can be when more than four out of 100 make the same choice to help. You will always be able to help. So do it. Make peace where it is precious. Help plant trees. Help embrace diversity and celebrate differences. Help stop gridlock. In other words, help solve every problem we face. Every single one of them, with the power of 4 out of 100. Help, and we will save the world. If we don't help, it won't get done.
I can't get that Beatles song out of my hand. Help, I need somebody. Or as Mr. Rogers' mother said, you know, in life, Fred, you got to look for the helpers, and the helpers are all around you. So I hope today's Super You show helped you unlock and unleash that superpower that then you can use to be a helper, that you can help others around you, help them achieve their best life, leadership, and also legacy. So thanks again for joining us for today's Super You podcast. I am your host, Equal Man. And again, this show is not made possible without all the great people that make it so, that produce it behind the scenes. So a big shout out and a big thanks to Maritza Gutierrez, Jake Brin, and Kelsey Gomez. Thank you, our listeners, for continuing to put in reviews on Apple. It really helps if you actually write something in there, not just hit the star, but we greatly appreciate whatever time you have. We do read all those. So thank you. It's helping other listeners. That's how you can help someone. Help someone that needs it. Find this show. So huge, huge thanks and forever grateful for all those reviews that keep pouring in. So thank you so much. It keeps us inspired here at the show. But I hope you're inspired today. And it's a reminder, this is Equal Man reminding all of us, it's not what we take from the world. It is what we leave behind.
7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Super you.